This is that other sports shit. Let's go. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back again. It is Wednesday, the 6th of March. Can you believe it? We're already in March. Spring is right around the corner. We're about to jump backwards in time, so the sun's going to be out longer. Days are getting longer. Nights are getting shorter. So you need more time in the day to be able to do certain activities like listen to this podcast, which you can find on Spotify and Apple under That Other Sports Show. Folks, we are here every week, but we are coming into our cleanup season of the year where there's not quite as much going on, but we are finding that pro wrestling is becoming the hottest sporting events ticket in the world.
It is cool again.
T-shirts will be flowing. People will start doing their hair like their favorite wrestlers again. I'm going to go get a pair of Macho Man Randy Savage sunglasses just to wear around for the summertime. Because, you know you got to have that going on a little bit. But without further ado, before we get into the rest of the lineup for this evening, let me introduce to you the man down in Fresno, holding it down King style, Mr. Jason Valdez.
It is a pleasure to be back with you, Jess. We are on pace for 30 shows again this year. We are on pace for record listeners early. We are once again tracking the metrics, and the people love the pro wrestling. The people love the combat sports. There are other things to talk about, right? We can do basketball. I didn't run this by you, Jess, but I'm going to run it by you right now. I just said, let's try and keep the window tight, and I'm going to just start rambling. So get ready. Reel me in if you need to. How is your basketball chat? What's the pulse of your basketball chat?
Well, let me go to it, and I will tell you.
Let's
see. So currently, the big thing on my basketball chat with my boys down here is a buddy of mine just bought the Devin Booker ones, the Nike version.
Ooh.
He's very excited about those. They're very plain and very ugly. Don't listen to this show, Mike. I'm sorry. We're doing some
D-book talk. He also got some
Maker's Mark out of the deal. So, I mean, that's incredible.
We're talking.
Obviously, Blazers stuff, and there's not a whole lot to talk about come Blazers stuff. So,
negative,
you know, it's
Blazers
mostly
stuff.
Like, what are they doing? You know, like, how negative can they stuff. Suck so bad?
So, the pulse of the basketball chat right now, there's a pulse, but it's not necessarily thriving.
Yeah, so that would be the point of it all, I guess, is that basketball is to hit that part of the season where we're not to the point where we should be excited about who's in and who's out of the playoff or playoffs. And so there's really not a lot going on to talk about.
Yeah, see, my basketball chat is very wrestling-oriented too right now, but it's a lot of hating Luka slander. Luka's not the MVP, and a lot of race in the West to one. You know, you got Denver, you got Minnesota, you got Phoenix, you got OKC. So there's that mix of they're like 2-3 games out between each other.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that. I think it's something like that. So I believe Denver will finish at the one, even though they absolutely shit the bed last night against Phoenix. After Phoenix gave up a double-digit lead. But we're going to save the basketball talk because we got time. We're going to save the baseball talk. It is the least scratched-upon subject seasonally, but at some point maybe we have a guest or two that talks about it. Shout out 9-inning knowing-all. If we ever decide to bring them back, maybe we'll bring back our boys that were holding it down. They had, like, the strongest Turkish baseball podcast back in the day. I mean, they were doing numbers. Jess, so there's really and I did a little bit of, hey Jess, what do you think of Justin Fields? What do you think of the draft stuff last night? But we have decided to can that because we've got a few weeks to before we start getting back in a more fluid football. So you're getting some pro wrestling this week. You're getting your a little bit of a follow-up on the Sting farewell. The Rock cuts possibly the best wrestling promo of the year. And really, in my mind, just puts he solidifies himself as the best wrestling talker of like the past 20 years. I think you can pick any one of the past 20 years and put him next to The Rock and you go, yeah, Rock's a little better. So we'll touch on the pro wrestling stuff. We're going to talk Nagano. AJ, I want to see where Jesse's at on the who you got there. We're going to talk a little bit of Jake Paul. Jake Paul was moving the needle a little over 3 years ago, Jess. Jess, when we did this podcast 3 years ago, the real needle movers were Nagano, were Paul, and Bones was still in that mix.
Definitely.
And I wonder if that's still, like with McGregor, your power three, or if Paul has started to really trend down. We'll touch on that. We'll touch on UFC 299. We'll do some who you got. We'll touch on the main card. I don't believe we'll touch on the prelims much, although I do see a banger or two down there, Jess. Jess, let's start it off right. Let's get to some plugs early and often. Who do we want to show some love to? Let's get it out of the way now.
Well, we have to start with our boys over at Variety Sports. Variety Sports Network is, I believe, like a central U.S.-based thing. But they have spread out so far. They have podcasts from all over the country. And so, I mean, you can literally listen about Chicago Bears football while listening about Pittsburgh Pirate baseball all in the same network. And then if you want to listen...
NASCAR, they had like a NASCAR
show. Yeah, they got NASCAR. I believe that they got a golf podcast somewhere. Oh. So the spread and the reach of Variety Sports Network has been really good over the last couple of years. And we are thankful and grateful to them for helping spread our love around to everybody as well. So you can find us on Variety Sports, Variety underscore Sports underscore on Twitter/X. And to go along with that, you got to follow our boys, Brian. You got to follow our boys, Tyler. There's a couple other guys, Fatboy Fadeaway Sports. What's Tyler's 49ers podcast? I'm actually going on it here this afternoon.
P&B podcast. You're doing back-to-back appearances?
I am doing back-to-back. You
made such waves last show that you are returning for another appearance.
They're getting the cutoff today, though. So, world, be prepared for these traps. I'm telling you.
Oh, God, yes. That was my next question.
The shoulders and the traps are the sun's out, guns out, baby. That's what I got to say. That's happening on the TB&D podcast this afternoon at 2:30. So be sure to be there.
If you want to see Jesse's beautiful, wide shoulders and smoochable lips, you got to watch. You got to go to YouTube and follow Variety Sports and find that TMB video stream simulcast. And, Jess, I'll be on there soon. I promise.
Yes, shout you out will. To I know boys. You will. Yes.
We love you. Dude, Wednesday nights is bad for me. They know this. I'm watching pro wrestling. Shout out Chef Che Rollins. We've said it before. We're saying it again. He's in the gym. I've started to send him gym memes. So the memes are shifting. They're pivoting from racist memes, lady memes, you know, sexy, beautiful women memes to thick Latino women memes to gym memes. So I'm very proud of my boy. Shout out JVD, Justin Von Doom. Doing a lot with that book. I see him on Threads. I don't do a lot on the Threads, but he's dominating that Threads. He's the top of my algorithm at Threads. He's there. So shout out the boys. We love you. And Jess, let's keep it moving. Let's jump into some pro wrestling.
Let's go.
So Jess, you know, we did the show last week. We've been talking the past few weeks, and I've made a prediction, and I am now going to do my plug walk, thug walk, crip walk, where I was right walk. I predicted weeks ago that we were going to get The Rock and Roman Reigns in a match against Cody and Seth Franklin Rollins. And we slowly but steadily made our way to Friday where The Rock decides, I'm going to turn on this Instagram. I'm going to cut a 21 minute edited promo with the fantastic people at the WWE, or maybe he got the Netflix editors. Who knows who he's got in his back pocket? And I believe he taped this at his home. I believe he taped this.
Yes, it was at his home.
Outside of the Iron Paradise. And, yes. You know, Jess, I hinted at it here earlier, but I want to get into it. I think The Rock, when you give him the microphone and you just get out of his way, he's the best promo guy in the business of the last 20 years. And I think about a Ric Flair. I think about a CM Punk, but I think Punk's more of a controversial hit and miss type guy. You know, he likes to say the things that you're not supposed to say.
Agreed.
The Rock can do it all. He can cut you down. He can make you laugh. He can convey emotion. I believe being in Hollywood the last 20 years has just made him better.
100%.
Give me some thoughts on this, Jess.
So, as we spoke about pre-podcast setup, I did not watch the entire thing. I should have. I saw tons of clips. I saw a lot of people talk about it. It was super fire on the internet. But I didn't watch the whole thing. I saw a bunch of the crybaby, Cody crybaby jack-off idiots.
He targeted my boy Dave LaGreca. Shout out Dave LaGreca.
Yeah, I was seeing really, that stuff. A lot of people were like,
"Cut my guy down."
A lot of people were like, "Why are you attacking Dave?" I'm like, "Who the fuck's Dave? Like, why is The Rock attacking Dave? Like, let's not do this,
first
Rocky.
Of all, who the fuck is he? Second of all, why?"
But I will say this from the parts that I saw, he is in his own world. I guarantee that there's in his contract with the WWE right now. There's a clause stating I'm allowed to do and say whatever the fuck I want outside of this building. Like, whenever I am not in this ring, I will say whatever I want to when cutting promos for your company. Because there is not one professional wrestler in the world that could say the things that he said in that video and not be fined or terminated or at least suspended. Like, he went off like a gang rant, man. Like, he was, like, threatening people's lives and shit. Like, and I mean, he's like, I'm going to burn your house down.
It's not like he was threatening their jobs. Like, and then, Jess, take it a step further. He goes on SmackDown later that night, and he calls people crackheads, and he calls them meth addicts.
That was really funny.
I don't
really
know if anyone else. I see, and here's where, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but I want to strengthen your point here.
Please do.
Here's the thing. I think most guys have to run their promos by a writing team.
1,000%.
I think most guys have to run it by a boss who's ultimately going to go, you know, that's pushing the lines. We are on Fox. You know, this is like it's a major network. We got to run that by Trips. We got to run that by the powers that be. I don't think Rock has the yellow tape. I don't think he has that middleman. He just goes, I'm going to go ahead and say this, and if it gets censored, fucking so be it, guys. And they just go, sounds good.
Yeah, well, here's the deal, too. Like, again, with The Rock, like, we spoke about it several weeks now since, you know, bringing up the Cody stuff and talking about upcoming WrestleMania. The Rock has been the biggest face of the WWE in the last 20 years, and he's bigger than Triple H, and I'm sorry, Triple H fans. He's bigger than Triple H.
Bigger than Stone Cold.
He's bigger than Stone Cold, and that hurts me because I love Stone Cold. He's bigger than The Big Show, and I will go on record as to say he is either at par, if not slightly above, The Undertaker.
What about John Cena? He's bigger than Cena.
He's bigger than Cena. And the reason being is that his on-mic skills have always been there. And he started off like a John Cena, where his in-ring skills were not quite to par. And then he just trained and trained and trained and got better and better and better. And then with the persona changes, he was allowed to adapt or subtract certain skill sets from his in-ring skills. And everything clicked, everything worked. He's the biggest face of the WWE in the last 20, 25 years. There's no one bigger outside of Hulk Hogan. When you have that kind of power,
yeah.
When you have that kind of motivation for the company to want to have you, I mean, he could be out there making a $300 million movie right now. You know, Fast and the Furious 27, you know, they're in outer space chasing, you know, UFOs and stuff. Instead, he's in the WWE ring week in, week out, preparing for the biggest event of their year, WrestleMania. And these promos that he's cutting are out of this world. Like, if you hear him speak, you're like, nah, man, this is, I need to tune in. So the WWE is getting their monies out of that guy.
Do you think, Jess, because he made sure to bring up Netflix and the billion-dollar deal that he was a part of.
Yeah.
Do you think this is a bit of a preview of, no, this is what I want us to do when we go to Netflix. This is how I want the brand to shift. And not necessarily guys going on television and saying, fuck your story. But guys going on TV and having a little bit more of an edge. And I don't want to go like the Attitude Era. Because when you go like the Attitude Era, you open up this incredible Pandora's box where it's like over the top sexism. Like there's all types of shit that I'm sure that they would love to keep canned. But when it comes to, we want to be a little bit more aggressive with our promos. We want stuff to be a little bit more realistic because the reality TV aspect of what they were able to do in the Attitude Era, we want to find a way to lasso that back in, because you can only tell the good guy versus bad guy in so many ways. We've seen that over the last 25 years. So Rock's going, all right, we're going to do it. We're going to put a spin on it. Do you think that's in play?
Oh yeah, 100%. Everything that we're witnessing right now is a lead up to the deal, like other movie deals. We're also probably leading into like the WWE's like next, like, you know, venture. Vince McMahon, whether, you know, we used to joke about it all the time, like, oh, he's not there, but he's actually there. You can't tell me that he's not there, like in spirit or on, and by spirit, I mean on the phone. Like, he's there helping guide this path. This is his baby. He helped create this. Where it's at today is because of Vince McMahon, regardless of whatever you want to say about him, sick psychopath or whatever, I don't care. You say what you got to say about the man, but he built the WWE. So if you watch the WWE, you're in fact, in a way, supporting Vince. So eat that crow, buddy. Do-rag Vince for life, by the way.
Don't get me started. That's my dog.
That's my dog right there. Do-rag Vince, baby. So he's there helping someone. It's Triple H, the writers. He's somewhere there. And the biggest thing is they've always looked forward, right? The WWE has never stayed stagnant for long. They've always found another niche. And so this is their next niche. And it's going to make them a ton of money. It's going to make the wrestlers a ton of money. I mean, you heard Seth Rollins, what, like last week before, he cut a promo talking about, you know, like, or no, it was, he was talking about Will Ospreay. It was after AEW Revolution. He sent a tweet out saying, oh, that's a nice match, kid. But, you know, you're too small to be, you know, heavyweight champion. He's sitting there talking about it, right? And then he said, oh, let's not even talk about bank accounts right now either. He can say that because I bet you he does have a shit ton more money than Will Ospreay. But that's because their rate, their financial rate is just so high, and it's only going up. Everything is about money in this business. So The Rock, he's going to make money. He's going to make movies. WWE is going to make money off The Rock. They're going to make money off Netflix. It's going to be crazy in the next few years.
Yeah, I think it's a one hand washes the other, where the more attention The Rock gets via the wrestling ring, it translates to the movie. It should, you would assume it would, but I'm a firm believer. And again, if you're a fan of The Rock, you're a fan of The Rock. So whether, you know, you're cheering him or booing him, he's going to find a way to market it, sell those t-shirts. And I'll tell you what, I told you this when we talked about WWE Fresno last week, The Rock had a fucking shirt on sale. He was selling that same shirt he was wearing in that promo was the same merch he had in the building, and people were fucking buying it. So as hard as he got booed, his shirt was still selling. So it attracts a certain fandom. It always will. Jess, let's keep it moving here again. Quickly, when we talk about the Cody and Seth versus Rock versus Roman, quickly here, just a yes or no. You think there's a chance that Seth turns on Cody in that match?
No. I mean, I know that that's kind of what it looks like it's geared to do, but I think that for me, I think it's going to be opposite. I think The Rock turns on Roman.
Yeah, I think you can go either or. I think
Yeah, you could. Yeah.
you can go, I think you can go Seth turns on Cody, Cody loses, but Cody still wins a bloodline match night two, because now all the chips are stacked against Cody. He's no chance he wins a bloodline match, and then he wins and it's a big deal. Or he loses both nights, and then we're still doing the finish the story another year. Or I believe what you believe, and I think this has kind of been where I've been at, been my position for a while when we've talked about this, is I think at some point Rock turns on Roman, and that sets up the bloodline match at next year's
Yeah,
WrestleMania.
head of the table,
You
man.
got a full year to build that
Can The
matchup.
Rock really go another full year, though?
I think they'll do a thing where he comes and goes. He's there for a few weeks, but he's not wrestling. He goes away for 3, 4 months. He pops back in for a show or two.
Okay.
He does that thing where he's not, he probably won't be truly in the building until that lead up for his actual match. But I would bet you he either wrestles zero or one match between now and WrestleMania. He's going to be at shows. He's going to be cutting promos, but I don't think he's going to do any actual wrestling.
I'm saying zero matches. He has zero matches.
Because I think one,
You
he's
got to
doing
keep
all
him
that
healthy.
training. One, he's doing all that training at home. He's doing all that training on the road. He's doing all that training with whoever he can, when he can find the training. And two, I think the fear is you have a match on SmackDown a week before WrestleMania and the guy fucking tears his ACL, which is in play because he's just an older cat. You don't want to risk that. You just
Yeah,
don't.
we just saw what happened to Christian, right? At Revolution, matter of fact.
Yep.
So
Don't want to risk it. You just
don't
don't
want to
want to
risk it.
fucking risk it. Jess, let's keep it moving. Speaking of Revolution, I tuned in. It was a fantastic pay-per-view. My constructive criticism is the same as all AEW pay-per-views the past year or so. They're too fucking long. I think when you have a wrestling show that starts at 4 o'clock, when you do 0 hour and it goes all the way, it ends at 9 o'clock. It's literally ending with Sting going, "All right, they're giving me the cue. The pay-per-view is ending. All the allotted paid-for time is over." I think that should be a sign. I don't think that it's necessarily that we're trained to those tight 2.5 hour pay-per-views that usually start at 5 and end at 7:30, 7:45. But I just think it's just too much. And I don't, it's not even about it's just too much wrestling, but I think at some point a lot of the matches seem to stay the same and they
You
blur.
do.
And I think you
Yeah.
could get more relevance out of Blackpool Combat Club, versus FTR on a special Dynamite than you can in a pay-per-view where it's going to be buried by Orange Cassidy versus Strong, where you're going to get the Ospreay versus Takeshita, where you're going to get Sting's final match. You're just going to have stuff that's going to get lost. You're going to have a Toni Storm versus Deonna Purrazzo match, which was good, but the crowd is flat because they've already watched 3 hours of wrestling and they pop like a motherfucker. And that up and down of a wrestling show, Jess, that I've talked to you about, that I experience when you're in at full gear, there's just an up and down of crowd emotion where at some point, like, even the loudest crowds at some point, they're just like, "I need a break. I need a piss break. I need to get a beer. I need to check my phone." And it just, you gotta spread it out. That's my constructive criticism. Jess, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about Ospreay Takeshita, so give me some
Yes.
notes on this.
Get down that we have every week. We talked about the that match, Ospreay and Takeshita, and everybody had been talking about it. Super low key card, right? Low key match. Real hardcore fans knew what this match could
Yeah,
mean to the
it had been
sport,
circled on the
right?
calendar. This match had been circled on the card. Everyone kind of knew Ospreay's doing the thing where you go, this match could deliver, and then it over delivers.
Yes. And so now you have your typical like WWE marks who are watching the show or whatever, and they're like, well, I don't know. I mean, I've heard of this guy, but like, I don't really know. Maybe you've seen a YouTube clip or whatever. But so these two men enter and they put on what many people believe. And I believe, I mean, I watch far less than Jason. So I'm letting everybody know, like, my opinion matters far less than what Jason's going to give right now. But what I believe is the best technically sound wrestling match I've ever seen in my entire life. And that even goes back to the Iron Man match between Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, which I believe at the time was the most technically sound wrestling match that I'd ever seen in my life up to this point. Like, I'd seen lots of great matches. I've seen Ospreay matches, and I love them. And I know that, you know, Dave Meltzer, he likes to throw out five stars here, five stars there. Ospreay's got a bunch of five-star matches. But I just thought that Shawn and Bret was just that much better. And even from a storyline perspective, which helped, obviously. But this match, if you watch, I've never seen two men be more technically sound in what they're doing and putting on very dangerous stunts at the same time, like dangerous shit. They were doing some crazy shit. And there's no way, like, I could not take my eyes off that match. I did not watch this pay-per-view. I did not. By the way, FBI did not illegally download this or look at this in any way, shape, or form that would cost me prison time or a fine. But I did, however, watch this match, and it was the most amazing thing. Like it's like a moment where, you know, like Van Gogh painted some shit, and he was like, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever painted. Like, that to me was that. Like, that was that moment. That was the best wrestling match I've ever seen.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me a lot of the first time I watched Mike Awesome and Masato Tanaka, where I went, these are two really big, really strong guys. Everything is high impact, and everything looks perfect from a standpoint of that looks incredibly painful, but I perceive it to be safe. This match was everything you want in an Ospreay match. I understand the criticism of it's a little bit video gamey, but it's 2024 and the days of, you know, headlock, wrist lock. I just watched Sting versus Flair 88 Clash of the Champions, and that motherfucker had some boring spots. That motherfucker had some spots where I got up and I did some other shit. Might have fucking picked something up or fucking thrown the trash out. Like, if there's just some spots in that match where you're like, it's just a rest hole. It's just a lot of rest holes, which sometimes you're going to get in a 45-minute match. But this match was just high impact, high velocity, stuff that you don't see in wrestling matches. I'm sure there are people that watch this and went, I've never seen that in a wrestling. And I think that's fucking cool. I think it's cool that Ospreay could still do that. And I've been watching him wrestle for like 4 years now. He did it in San Jose at the Battle of the Valley in the Okada match, where I went, I've never seen anybody do that. But Jess, you know this. I have been talking. I've been fucking putting over Takeshita for a year. I said, and I'll continue to say it, I think that he should have been the guy that beat MJF instead of having Samoa Joe as this weird transitional champ.
I am going to slightly disagree with you, but keep going.
I think that right now is the time that you put the belt on him. I'm not joking. You put the belt on him and you have him keep it until All Out, and then you do Ospreay Takeshita again for the heavyweight championship, the AEW championship. You have Ospreay win, and he's the biggest fucking babyface in your company. He's bigger than any. He's bigger than Hangman when Hangman was a face. He's bigger than any of these guys. He's a fucking superstar. I'm interested in seeing what they do with him. My fear is when you're doing these type of matches, at some point you're going to get a little bit banged up, and that would be my concern. He's got a match tonight against Kyle Fletcher. Teammate in Aussie Open, and
fucking boy.
I'm already anticipating these guys are going to beat the shit out of each other. So now I'm going, damn, he just had two violent matches in like 4 days. I don't know if that's the best medicine. But yeah, you got to take a break here. But but we shall see. Just speaking of Samoa Joe, the Samoa Joe Swerve Hangman match was good. But again, when you have a match like this, that's the match of the year, and then you have Sting's last match, and that heavyweight championship is sandwiched in between, as great of a match as it was, it loses a little bit of its luster. It loses a little bit of its shine. It just gets lost in the sauce because there's just 4 hours of fucking great wrestling. Jess, let's touch on Sting's last match, and then we'll hop into some, you know, the other combat sports, the fake stuff. The one thing that I thought, you know, that morning I watched Sting Hogan from, I wish I remember what it was, the 98 show where Sting wins the belt off of Hogan.
Oh, yeah.
Great show. God, I wish I remember which one it was. It was, Super Brawl. WCW Super Brawl.
I believe it, yeah.
Sting, non-NWO Sting, beats Hogan and all the NWO. Just a fun match. And took the ride down memory lane. And then I went Sting Flair 88 Battle of the Belts. And just again, good match, but a little bit long, a little bit old school. If you're an old school guy, the thing it did, Jess, was it reminded me of my childhood. It took me back to my past. It took me back to being a child and watching these with my grandfather and my uncle who loved pro wrestling. And, you know, God bless them. Now they're both in heaven. I'm hoping they both passed away. When I saw Sting's son come out with the red, white, and blue face paint, when Sting came out, I got emotional. It hit me. I thought of my grandpa, thought of my uncle. Got a little bit emotional, I'm not going to lie. And then as the others, and they have a wide shot. So I'm thinking, holy fuck, is Sting going to wrestle as the USA 88 Sting? This is badass. And then as the shot tightens up, one, you go, oh, I don't think that's Sting because he's fucking wide. He's huge. And then his son comes out, NWO Sting, and other son.
Give me your side thought on him going NWO Wolfpack over NWO Black.
I was with it because Sting's coming out in the black or white. So I was with it. It was just a fantastic walk down memory lane. And as long as you get, you know, we talked about it last week, you know, the three or four different versions of Sting outside of the Joker version, you got the three most memorable Stings: Black and White Crow Sting, NWO Wolfpack Sting, and Surfer Red, White, and Blue Sting. So it was everything you wanted. It was a fucking perfect match, Jesse. It really was a perfect match. It was not. I'm stealing this from somebody else. I can't remember this. I think it was Mike Sempervivi. It was not a 5-star match, but it was a 5-star performance by everybody involved. It was 100%. A perfect send-off match, perfect way to end the career. You mentioned the Darby stuff in pre-show, and you know every pay-per-view you're gonna have a crazy Darby spot. It's just you know what's gonna happen. And then I'm guessing because it's Sting's last match, he's like, oh,
Darby really wants to go hard.
Let's take it a step higher. Let's get two fucking van back window levels of, you know, width and height of glass, and let me just go through these off of a 12-foot ladder, which is already inside of the, you know, 4-foot ring. the explosion of the glass, and how you watch, you know, there's a video, you know, a fam shot,
yes,
of the glass going into the front row.
Yep.
And you're just like, this is fucking insane. You get your Sting high spot. You get Sting taking some bumps, and you get
he took off the top through the table.
That was insane.
Like, we talked about this last week. He's old. He's 64 fucking years old, guys.
Yes.
He should not be doing, you know, bumps through tables.
But he's 64, and he's in the and in the front row are a bunch of other 60-year-old wrestlers, and they look 60. They look old as fuck. They're in Lex Luger is in a goddamn wheelchair. Yeah.
Steamboat looks like, you know, he's been chain smoking, you know, Marb Lights and you know, drinking Natty Plus for like the last 15 years.
He's vaping, but credit to Steamboat, still sells better than anyone in the world. Steamboat gets hit with something and he acts like a man shot. I really do love it. You always are gonna have that half of a second of concern of like, is he okay? Because he's 60. No, but he's then like an hour later, he's back in the back with the marbles and the fucking Bud Light doing his thing. Ric Flair took a really nasty super kick to the face, which felt borderline elder abuse. I know the anti Ric Flair people made it a point to jump on the Twitter machine and say thank you, Young Bucks. But you get the perfect finish, which is, I think it was Matt. He takes the stinger, the death drop.
Yeah, he gets the scorpion death drop.
He kicks out, and then they do the combination death drop, Darby coffin drop, turned into the scorpion deathlock.
Yes.
And you get the tap. And then they do the confetti. You know, it didn't make the pay-per-view, but then they get everybody that comes out to the stage.
That part,
I mean,
cool.
It was fucking perfect, Jess.
I want to take this in even a step further and say that of all companies Sting has worked for, whether it's TNA, NWA, WCW, brief stint with WWE that really pissed me off. Any of the companies that he's been associated with, I think that he even did time in New Japan at one time, or at least a match or two. So,
a little honeymoon there.
Right? So, of all companies, he comes to AEW when he's 60, I think 61, almost 62 years old. Let's just say he's 62, right? Because I think he's basically spent the last two, possibly almost 3 years with AEW.
Close to three.
So, of all companies to acquire the Stinger, the icon, they acquire him at 61, almost 62 years of age, and they're basically thinking like, you're not going to be a performer, you're going to be a manager, and we have the perfect kid for you. It's Darby Allin. He's this, you know, crazy kid who rides a skateboard down the ramp, and I think that he would be a perfect fit for you to be a manager of. And I think that Sting was like, yeah, I can probably do that, you know. And at some point in time, he decides, well, I kind of want to perform also. So they start doing these small stints of performing. Then he actually has matches. Sting finishes his record at AEW with a 29-0 sparkling performance. He's put on matches. I have not seen him put on a bad match. I've seen him have bad spots, but I've not seen him in a bad match. And the storylines have all been just fantastic. Like, they're A++++ for the storylines given to the Stinger and, of course, to Darby alongside of him the entire time, which makes it even better for me because usually you have that partner turn on your mentor, or maybe the mentor turns on the partner. They were like, no, we're going to stick it out with these two. So for nearly 2.5 years, he ends his career 29-0, 39 years in the business. And he ends 29-0 with AEW. And I have to say that they handled the Stinger with such poise and just respect. There was an interview with Tony Khan, and Tony Khan said, when I was first speaking to Sting about coming to AEW, I told him, I said, I dislike how the other company has handled you. He goes, I won't make that same mistake. He goes, I will give you all the respect that you deserve, and I feel that I want to give you. And he made that happen. His storyline, his whole arc was flawless all the way to the end.
We'll leave it at that. Strong 40-plus minutes of wrestling after we said we were going to try and keep it 30, Jess. Seamless transition to combat sports. The unique Friday Saudi Arabia fight. Shout out to the Sheik. God, I don't want to fuck that up. This guy had me murdered, got me buried. The hot is his cheek, the young man that puts on these fights, the best promoter in the business. I'm just gonna call him that. Lasso in together, Ngannou and AJ. There's some other great fights on that as well. But we really want to focus on AJ versus Ngannou. It's gonna be Friday afternoon, some weird time. So heads up, if you're listening to this on Friday night and you're waiting for that Ngannou fight, you probably missed it. Jess, give me some thoughts on this fight, and let's just jump right in, Daddy. Who you got?
So we're talking Ngannou and AJ, which I think is one of the biggest boxing matches of the last probably decade. And the reason I say that is because it has just so much meaning. Like, we have Francis Ngannou, a former UFC heavyweight champion. We have his whole storyline, where he came from, where he ended up, and where he's at now. We have AJ, who we see is, you know, we've seen him as a perennial champion, and yet he's not been able to capture the potential. And so, now we have this crossroads of such, AJ being the younger guy, Francis being the older guy. And if I have to look at the way that their careers have been, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm sticking with my pick. Francis Ngannou wins fourth round knockout of AJ. Fourth round knockout is happening.
Jesus.
Francis is going to batter him. He's going to take punches because AJ is the better technically sound boxer. But Francis is the bigger, thicker bodied man, and he's going to be able to absorb most of those. And when he gets that open, he's going to take it. I'm calling it right now. It's either going to be an uppercut or it's going to be a left hook. But AJ's going down fourth round, and it's going to be a pure knockout too. No TKO, no 10 count. I'm telling you, AJ's lights are going out. Put your money on that right now, folks.
So I was thinking prior, am I going to try and talk you off of this?
Can't talk me off the ledge.
But I think you're standing on business here, and I just got to get out of your way on this one. So I tweeted out about 2 months ago that I will more than likely talk myself into Ngannou knocking AJ out within 6 rounds. Prior to, between when I sent that tweet and when the actual fight happens, I successfully did not. I was actually able to, I'm proud of myself. I drew the line in the sand, if you will, Jess, dug my heels in, and I'm going to stick with AJ. It's not my most confident pick. I'm about 60-40 on this.
Ooh, that's closer than I thought you'd be.
But I will say this. It would not surprise me if he knocked AJ out, because he's got power. He's got confidence in his right hand. He's got confidence in his left hook. I believe the fight with Ngannou gave him even more confidence, because his thought process has to be, I've already went 10 rounds, 12 rounds with the best fighter in the world.
Oh, Tyson Fury?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't know who I said. I'm sorry. Yeah, I've already done my 12 rounds with Tyson Fury, with one of the best fighters in the world. So I know I can do this. Now it's just a matter of me being a little bit more confident in my offensive skill set, while also being able to be disciplined defensively, because AJ does have a little bit of pop in his gloves.
He does.
Now, I know we're always going to lean towards that Andy Ruiz fight and go, here's the blip. Here's where you would look at it and go, we've caught him. He's been caught slacking. He's been caught against an opponent where he should have won easily, and the opposite happened. He got knocked out. I don't believe he's going to allow that to happen this time. I think he's going to fight a very smart fight. I think he's going to stay on the outside. I think he's going to use the golden gloves, shoe shine, kind of the same thing that Fury did, where he's not really sitting on the punches. He's not throwing the punches with the nastiest intent, not that wind up Randy Johnson right hand type stuff that you'll see out of Ngannou. I think he's going to try and pop, 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 get out, pop, 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 get out, pop, pop, get out. Twos and threes, maybe threes and fours, a lot of circling. He's he would be advantageous if he could, if he's either far on the outside, away from his power, or in his chest, you know, closer than a phone booth fight, if you will, like really inside of his guard, just trying to manipulate being the better world-class boxer and using the overall skill set that you have. He should just be a better marksman because of his overall experience. Can Ngannou's power negate that? Yes. Can Ngannou's power be the ultimate equalizer? Yes. And that's why I think Jess can confidently make that pick.
I mean, we've seen Ngannou, and I know, totally different world, right? Both times, because like I'm talking about Alistair Overeem being a K1 champion, like boxer, kickboxer. We've seen that, and then we've seen what happened to Alistair, and then you now enter this realm where, okay, so my take on the Ruiz fight that you brought up, which I think is a great fight to bring up, obviously, when talking about AJ, it wasn't that Ruiz was the better fighter. I think we both would agree with that. I think that he just showed more heart in that fight. He did not want to lose that fight.
And he wasn't and he wasn't afraid to get in there and bang.
And he wasn't afraid to get in there and bang and take some shots. And he basically wore AJ's confidence out. Like, you could see AJ slowly fading, not physically, because he was still throwing big punches.
Yep.
But you could see his mental game fading. And that, to me, is the biggest thing. That's the biggest sign of a champion. How is your mental game? Jason says it all the time, 90% mental, right? 10% is everything else, 90% mental. So in AJ's world, if he's on it and he's killing it and he's got the guy against the ropes, his mental game's strong, his physical game's strong, he's going to win that fight. But when he meets an opponent that can back him down consistently and not take those big hits or not get knocked down quick or not take those quick strikes, you see his mental start draining, and then he almost starts looking for a way out. Ruiz did that to him. He ends up with a big win, the biggest win of his entire career. In this case, you're not taking on a pudgy, you know, Hispanic kid from, you know, East from LA. Down the block, you know, from East LA, right? And all respect to Ruiz, he's a great boxer in his own right, right? But now you're
those two fights changed his life. Those two fights literally changed his fucking 100%.
But now where you're at is you're gonna be standing face to face with a 6'4" Nigerian nightmare. Like, literally, he's a nightmare. The man is built like a shit brick house. He can punch through a brick house. And if you put your guard down one time, AJ is going to find out what Alistair's found out, what so many other UFC fighters have found out. Like, when you get hit by Francis Ngannou, there ain't much left after that. You're remembering waking up. That's about it. So is AJ the better boxer? 100%. Technically sound? 100%. Better footwork? 100%. But that knockout power, that's the key factor. And we've seen that with a lot of other fighters throughout the history of time. So
this is what made the Deontay Wilder AJ fight so intriguing, was the exact same points. It's the, is AJ better in all these other areas? Yes. Does he check every other box when you put him side by side? Yes. But is the power the ultimate equalizer? Is Wilder's power, that, you know, otherworldly power that we've seen him unleash, is that the ultimate equalizer? And we all thought, yeah, that's why we wanted to see that fight. Wilder hits the bed, Ngannou next man up, because our man, the Sheik, the greatest promoter in all of combat sports, the guy that got Bellator versus PFL done, he just opened his wallet, shook out some change, and made that happen. You know what? Fucking odd man out. Yeah, next man up. Fury. I'm sorry. Yeah, Wilder, you're out. And Ngannou, you're in. So here we go.
This Sheik guy, when you have that type of money, and the Saudis got money, man, let me tell you about that. Right now they got money. You don't need to have fights that make sense, right? Wilder, AJ would have made sense. Like, they're both boxers. They're both top five guys, you know, former heavyweight champions. So now what you need to do is, like, you want to make money. And, Jay, you and I say it all the time, freak shows make the money. This is the best freak fight that you can ever possibly have if you're a boxing fan. I don't know how other boxing fans are taking this. I really don't understand. I don't know how other boxing fans are taking this. Like, and I mean enthusiasts. But for me, I'm not an enthusiast by any means. And I can't wait for this fight.
Jess, I'm glad you brought this up because this is a great seamless transition as I clear my throat. I think that the Sheik has the power to go, I'm just going to make it happen. And we talked about this in our pre-show. Once again, bring up the pre-show. That we talked about how he has the ability to cut through the yellow tape. To go, I don't need to get the PBC involved. I don't need to get DAZN involved. I don't need to get ESPN involved. I don't need their money. I have all the fucking money. So I just cut the check and you motherfuckers make it happen. There's no arena out here. Fine, I'll build one. Like, that's the type of fucking money and power that this dude weighs. And this is how we're able to see these type of fights happen in the last 12 months, 18 months. Now, it's so untraditional because you're not seeing the ads like you did 10 years ago for Canelo versus, you know, whoever. Yeah, you know, yeah. When Canelo versus Triple G were fighting 5-6 years ago, and you were seeing the ads on ESPN, you were seeing the ads online, you were seeing the ads everywhere. They don't have to promote the fight because these guys have already made their money because the Sheik just cuts the fucking check. That's the difference between the Sheik and all the other promoters that go, no, you need to go out and promote this fight. You need to go out and do this because the pay-per-view buys are part of your bottom line. There's this, there's that. The Sheik just gives these guys guaranteed money, and everything on top of that is just, it's just more money. It's a cherry on top. So, Jess, when we did something else we talked about, and I tweeted about this, and this really got my wheels turning. You know, someone that has a major influence and seems to be in all these events where the Sheik is involved is Ariel Helwani. And Ariel Helwani will be involved in the Ngannou stuff. Ariel Helwani has been a big proponent of Ngannou getting paid, Ngannou getting the bag. And I think there's two reasons behind this. One, he wants to stick it to Dana. Two, it's a big look, I was right. Look at me, I was right moment. I told you guys, this is about fighter empowerment. More fighters should be taking this chance. More fighters should be doing this. But I think just when we dig a little bit deeper here, I think some of this has to do with Ariel's bottom line. And I think Ariel knows, as long as he is promoting these fights and he is talking about Ngannou, it's going to bring more clicks, more eyes. His social media accounts have enormous, what's the word I'm looking for here? Outreach. They touch, you know, you get a lot of eyes, a lot of views.
And it's not just combat sports people either.
No,
his reach is in the entertainment world.
Hollywood area,
baby. Like,
so when we look at Ariel right now, it seems like the two fighters that he's got a lot of stake in are Ngannou and Jake Paul. And Jake Paul just fought this past week, and it was such a blip on the fucking radar. And by blip, I mean a baby blip. Because you had the UFC, because you had Sting's last match, because you had another banger of a boxing match on ESPN late night, Saturday night, which might have been the fight of the year. You have all this great stuff that I had a moment, Jess, and this is the first time this has happened in a very long time, where Friday afternoon, I might have even tweeted it. I went, Jake Paul's fighting this weekend? I didn't know Jake Paul was fighting. Now, I don't know if this is a combination of the lack of promotion, the lack of a B-side, because he's fighting, I believe the guy was legitimately an Uber driver, or or a combination of these things. I don't know if it's because he's fighting in Puerto Rico and not America, so it's not getting more American crossover promotion. But I think we're in an interesting spot here, Jess, when it comes to Jake Paul. I think you said it yesterday, and I want to give you some space here. you may believe the Jake Paul era is dead. It's over, and the interest in his fights is now obsolete. Give me your thoughts.
Yeah, so my thought process behind that is simple. So when Jake Paul first came aboard, it was entering into the combat sports realm. It was a shock factor. There was a huge shock factor there. They're like, oh, this YouTube kid? Now look at him. He's all grown up. He's got crazy hair. He's got tattoos of, like, all different kinds all over his body. Like, now he wants to be a fighter, you know, and he's calling all these people out. And it started with the UFC stuff, you know, calling out a bunch of UFC fighters, which obviously, you know, under contract, can't do that kind of thing. Jake Paul's just trying to make a name for himself. It's pretty obvious. But it worked. You know, it got him where he's at. He then went into his own, you know, company. And there were some successful things. I mean, obviously, you know, he's had some fights. You know, the Tyron Woodley thing. What was it? Ben Askren. He fought Ben Askren, right?
Yeah, well, if you think about it, he had the Nate Robinson knockout.
That's right. Nate Robinson. Buzz. I forgot about that. Which I thought Nate was going to totally kill him, by the way.
Which got the buzz. And then he parlayed that into the Ben Askren fight.
Yeah, there was Askren, and then that went into the Woodley thing. Fight. Woodley was like, fuck that. You're just fighting a guy who couldn't hit nobody in the UFC, so fight me. And then it just kind of parlayed, like you said, into where he's at. But here's
Fury,
the thing.
He fought the other Fury, and yes. That's when he started to trend down. He lost that fight.
Well, yeah. Okay, so it's not about losing the fight. It's the fight. It's the fact that fight was boring as shit.
Yeah.
Like, there was no action in that fight. Both men... So it was a bad look for Fury. I mean, you're a professional boxer, and you're not a slouch either. You're a decent boxer, and you can't even put away. You can't even put away a YouTube kid.
That's a good point.
So it was a bad look altogether, and that's why I think boxing fans, and going back to the boxing enthusiasts, they were like, "Nah, this ain't for me anymore." Like I thought maybe it had a chance, it had a little pull. But I'm out, man. Like, even Fury can't do it. Like, he can't beat a YouTube kid. The YouTube kid comes out saying all these crazy things. He comes out looking like a little bitch. Like, I'm over it. And then regular fans who are just like Jake Paul fans or whatever, they're like, well, I'll give it another shot. But all you hear now is like, no UFC fighter wants to touch him. And I'm betting Dana White and ESPN and Disney have a little something to do with that. He can't really get into the WWE stuff because I don't think that he has a play in that.
His brother's already taken that over.
Logan's done that. And could Jake come into it? Maybe, but I don't see Jake being near the athlete that Logan is. So now he's stuck in this world where he's going to have to continue putting on these shitty-ass YouTube events
he's gonna
or whatever
keep
in Puerto Rico.
Begging to fight Canelo, and Canelo's going to come.
Why would Canelo take that fight? Canelo could literally, if he wanted to, they would not make any money off that fight. And boxing enthusiasts would then laugh and mock Canelo for even taking the fight. There's no way Canelo would even – he's never even thought about it.
Anything outside of Canelo knocking him out within three rounds would be a loss.
Disastrous. It would be disastrous. Let's be real. It would be disastrous. It wouldn't even just be bad. It would be disastrous. Canelo would then be looked at, like, so poorly. And even Jake Paul, like, let's face it, like, does he show a skill set in boxing? Yes. Does he show a little pop in the glove? Yes. Maybe, however, he should spend less time with the women out there and the drugs and the scene.
Oh.
And if he wants to be taken seriously, maybe his ass should be in the gym like Canelo. When's Canelo not in the gym? I don't know, because I always see Canelo in the gym. He's with his family or he's in the gym because he's a champion. And that's what champions do. Jake Paul is only taking the sport serious enough to try to make him some pocket change. But eventually, when that's your route, you can do that with certain sports. You can't do that in the UFC, and you can't do that in boxing. You just can't. Eventually, you end up getting beat up a lot, and then people lose faith in you, and they don't want to see you no more, and then your ass is out on the street. That's where Jake Paul's heading. So he needs to be careful about his next few moves.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. That last point is a very poignant point. So let me say this. I think the Jake Paul wave is at a crash because a year or two ago, you could lure people in with Jake Paul's fighting, but Serrano is also on the card and she's fighting this person. Jake Paul's fighting, but there's also another great boxer or good boxer or serviceable boxer on the card that will draw some boxing fans' eyes. And I also thought for a minute you might be able to get, and I talked about this, that father-son connection, that uncle-son connection, you know, that boxing always, you know, it's that baseball dad-son connection that
100%.
You know, that I think boxing, you know, boxing's always been great at, where you sit down with your dad and you watch boxing, you sit down with your uncle and you watch boxing. So I think that he was able to draw some eyes because of that. But I think once he was exposed as, oh, this is his limit, this is his ceiling, he's never going to be able to beat a Golden Gloves guy. He's never going to be able to beat, you know, a guy with an above average skill set. That's when you're going to, that's when the people are going to start turning it off. That's when people are not going to pay for your fights. That's when you're going to get, you know, the high levels of pirating, if you will. And that's when, and this is when, as I said, you get the crashing of the wave. You get the downtrending, if you will. His next move has to be outside of his comfort zone. He needs to fight somebody that boxing fans or combat sports fans are going to look at and go, that's a tough fight for Jake. Yeah, he might get knocked out in that fight. It can't be a Diaz brother. It can't be a guy that's been retired for 2 or 4 years. It can't be a Tony Ferguson. I don't know who it needs to be, but it needs to be somebody. I can't pull the rabbit out of my hat.
Where's Guy Metzger?
A lot. Trot Seligman. Just on this show, we're really good at being part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Exactly.
We fix a lot of shit.
We do.
For free.
So, but someone should pay our ass for this stuff.
But this one, bro, I got nothing. This one, I'm drawing here. Blanks, man. Really, I am really drawing blanks.
I think that his next move needs to be more promoter and less fighter. I think that he can take a fight from time to time, like maybe like twice a year, right? If the fight's right for him and the money's right, do it. I don't think that his promotions are that bad. I honestly, there's a lot of good fights that come off his cards. There really are.
Well, the Serrano, but, it's usually Serrano. Serrano's been his B-side for a while.
But here's what you need to do. You need to start. So here's where being a promoter in a business full of promotions sucks. Because if you don't have the actual money, like I'm not saying he don't have money because he does, but he ain't got Disney money. He ain't got Saudi money.
Hey, thank you. Thank you.
That's where he's going to run into problems. Now, can he put on like local, regional, you know, like shows? Yeah. Can he make a few bucks? Sure. But at one point in time in his life, he's going to have to decide, like, is this really going to, you know, be satisfying for the next 30 years? Or should I just give it up and go party because that's what I can still do that? And as far as his fighting is concerned, again, like he's running very quickly out of options of people who will even want to take his fights. Because one, how much are they getting paid? Are they going to go to PFL and get $1 million bucks? Nah. Are they going to go fight Jake Paul for $8,000? You know what I mean? Are they going to go fight in the UFC where they could get a multi contract like for, you know, 50, 60, 70,000? Are they going to go fight Jake Paul for, you know, $6,000-$7,000? Like, he's running out of options. So he either needs to, A, stick with the promotion side and just take a freak fight every now and then, or he needs to sell his shit and just get out.
So and let me say this, and then we'll move to the UFC. I'm a firm believer in okay, – he's made a shitload of money. He's made a lot of money. Has he made more money than he claims? Maybe not. But has he made a lot of money? Yes. He's done a great job of promoting the Paul brand. Every time I fucking turn on my Snapchat, he's on a commercial. He's a Snapchat commercial. He's on these commercials. He's finding other ways to generate revenue. And I think you may be onto something. It may be time for him to go to the promoter's chair and do more of like the Jorge Masvidal thing. it's he I believe he does have enough money to make that happen. With the occasional, I'm going to fight here every 6 months. I'm going to take a fight here. But I believe if he wanted to be taken seriously, he would go, I'm going to take somebody in the top 50, that, ranked in the top 50, that has about 10 to 15 fights, and I'm going to box them in a 10-round fight. And that way he can say, I've beaten a credible fighter. I'm not a has-been, not a never-will-be, not a combat sports dude, but an actual guy that was ranked in the top 50. Then I beat a dude in the ranked in the top 30. Do that. Will he do that? No. You know why? Because he's afraid to take those chances. He's afraid to take those risks. The risk versus reward isn't enough for his bottom line. It's way safer for him to do what you're saying, Jess, to fight the YouTube guys, to fight the has-beens, to fight the never-will-bes, to be the, you know, the co-attraction, and let Serrano be, you know, the real attraction. That's going to be his.
Yeah, best. But and even if that's his thing, how much longer is Serrano really going to stick around?
Mm-hmm. 2-3 years.
Maybe.
2-3 years. I mean,
somebody's going to offer
gonna sound,
him.
This is going to sound fucked up, but the worst thing that could happen to him is she gets pregnant.
Oh.
It's the worst thing that could happen to him.
That's a long time without having your workhorse for you.
Fuck, 24 months, baby. She says, hey, I'm taking a year off to have this baby. I'm taking a year off to be a mom. What are you going to do? Say no? Fuck out of here. You do not. You're fucked. You better hope you can find another Serrano. Better hope there's another Serrano sister somewhere kicking around Puerto Rico at one of those gyms. Jess, let's keep it moving. Let's move on to the UFC here. We do have a banger of a card. Every fight is good on the main card. You've got Macy Barber on. You've got RDA versus Gamru. You've got Curtis Blaydes on the fucking prelims. But we're going to leave those alone, Jess. I'm going to start right when we kick off that pay-per-view. Song Yerong, he's got pop. He's a fucking great fighter. He is taking on Peter Young. I believe Peter Young is a slight favorite. Who you got?
Slight favorite. And I'm taking the underdog. I'm taking Song Yadong. I think he's a phenomenal grappler. He's definitely got pop in his gloves. Peter Yan has proven over time to be a little robotic. People may want to say methodical, but he just looks like a damn robot. And he throws the same combinations, and he hopes for like an aggressive stance to kind of push people back. You're not going to push Song Yadong back. I think Song Yadong wins. And I'm going to go TKO somewhere in the third round.
You know, I worry about Peter Yan with the aspect of the three losses in a row after, I mean, he was borderline pound for pound number one.
Yeah.
And we've seen this so much more in the UFC where you trend down and then you trend down something fierce. I thought he lost the fight to O'Malley off the top of my head. I thought he lost that fight. He definitely lost the fight against Mexican Marab. He lost the fight to Aljo. Aljo basically sunned him in that fight. I'm going to go Yan here. It's reluctant. I think he does win two out of the three rounds. I could see a scenario where Yadong comes out hot and wins the first round, and Yan settles down and wins the second or third. He cannot do the thing he did against Mexican Marab, which is take a full round to warm up because you're so used to five rounders. You bet you got to come out hot from the jump. I'm going Yan, not greatly confident. And I'm going to go judge's decision two or three rounds. Gilbert Burns is back, Jess.
He's I love fighting. This fight.
I love this. Every fight on this fucker is a banger.
This fight is a straight banger.
He's taking on JDM, Jack Della Maddalena. Jack Della Maddalena, I believe, but I'm double checking here. Five fight, six fight winning streak. Looked really good against Kevin Holland. I thought won the fight relatively easily. Burns is a hell of a challenge, but you always know, Jess, Burns has only got so much in that gas tank. If he if If he catches you in that first 7 to 10 minutes, it's a problem. After that first 7 to 10 minutes, he goes a zero, 100 to zero real quick. That tank hits E, and that fuck gas light starts flashing like you wouldn't believe. Who you got?
Again, I'm going for the vet, and I'm going for the underdog. I think that Gilbert Burns, his last couple fights, he's proven that he may not have completely fixed his gas tank problems, but he's been able to finish those long, drawn-out fights. And I think that Gilbert's always been a phenomenal striker. I think that's something Jack's going to have a hard time defending is against that wild Brazilian style, like, you know, kickboxing style striking. I think that he's used to facing like straight up boxing style strikers. And so he is going to have to deal with that. And the leg kicks from Gilbert Burns, I'm telling you, man, he's going to wear those legs out. Jack Della Maddalena has not fought a guy like Gilbert Burns. And even though Gilbert's not the same Gilbert from 3-5 years ago, I think that he's going to be able to take the up-and-comer to the limit. I think he's going to win a decision at UFC 299. So,
I love that pick. You're whipping it right out with all of these picks today. And I respect you so much for it. Just whip it out. I'm leaning JDM here. Again, not a ton of confidence. And now that I'm hearing Jess, and Jess has peppered these thoughts into my mind, I can totally see what Jess is saying. Those leg kicks are a mother. But I think JDM gives him some fits. I know he's coming off that Muhammad loss, but prior to that, he looked really great in some wins against Masvidal and Magny and Wonderboy. I'm leaning JDM. I like him winning 2 out of the 3 rounds. I do believe, you know, my prior statements. I think Burns is going to start to run out of gas here come that second round, and Magdaleno will turn it on, and he'll get 2 out of the 3 rounds. I'm going decision. Our third fight, Jess, Michael Venom Page. And I'm going to tell you right now. I went back and forth on this fight. And this is how much combat sports takes over my brain. I was laying in bed this morning thinking about just this fight and thinking, I went 3 different ways in bed in 5 minutes on this fight, Jess. Who you got?
I really, really do want to take Kevin Holland. I think that Kevin Holland is such a tough competitor. We've seen, I mean, if you look at the record, like over 30 fights, like almost nearing that 40 mark now, his long career, he's got a bunch of big wins. But I'm going to give it to MVP because MVP striking is what's going to be the phenomenal part of the fight. I think he's going to throw those crazy spinning elbows and he's going to try the crazy takedowns. And I think that he's going to catch Holland somewhere. Not that Holland isn't capable of beating Page, because I think that he is if it was a straight-up fight. But MVP doesn't fight straight up. He's got a very awkward style, and that throws people off. I think it's going to throw Holland off, and he's going to get caught. I think MVP, by decision, not a finish. Holland's a tough guy to finish. MVP by decision. It's going to be a good fight, though. Banger of a fight.
This motherfucker is a pick'em when I look at the odds. See, I'm so glad I didn't look at the odds until right now, because I would have been pissed if I came in here and it was like a minus 400 for Michael Page. Jeff, I am fucking going opposite. And this is... If you are counting the Ngannou fight now, this is 4 consecutive fights. And it may be 5 or 6. Man, I just think Holland's going to make this a dogfight. I don't think he's going to allow – I don't think he's getting snake charmed by MVP. And I think what happens in a lot of fights with MVP is guys get snake charmed, and he's not getting snake charmed by MVP. He's going to fucking make this a phone booth fight. He's going to at some point get up in his chest, pump him up against the cage. And when Holland can out-wrestle you, he fucking loves to wrestle. When he knows he can't out-wrestle you, he will stay fucking far outside of that circle. But when he knows that he can give you fits grappling, he will. And I think Holland is going to submit Venom Page. I think he's going to catch him in some type of choke here.
Wow.
Some point in the second round. I'm going Holland submission round 2. Benoit St. Denis, I believe.
One of my favorite up-and-coming fighters. Oh my God, I can't wait for this fight.
You talk the talk. You walk the walk. He is facing Dustin Poirier. Jess, who you got?
This fight has me hashtag MMA horns. I'm telling you right now. Like, oh, it's a
weekend of just combat sports.
I can't even formulate sentences right now. This fight is like, holy shit. Like, I'm so ready for this fight. This fight is the fight I'm looking forward to the most on the entire card. I'm telling
That's
you right
crazy.
Now. I love this fight. My boy, BSD, Benoit St. Denis, I'm telling you, he's the up-and-coming guy. He's going to beat Dustin Poirier. I'm telling you, he's going to beat Dustin Poirier. It's going to be a decision, but he is going to look good. Poirier has not looked phenomenal in his last couple fights, and I think that just there's been a lot of time off in between stuff, you know, like whatever's going on. He's got a lot of fundraisers and stuff like that that he does on the outside. Plus, he takes care of his family full-time. He's a phenomenal man, phenomenal father, phenomenal husband. But just the last couple times he's fought, and he's looked a little slow, a little lackluster. Benoit St. Denis has looked phenomenal. And he's in the gym, and he's training. He's that young up-and-coming cat, man. He's hungry for it. He wants it. I compare this fight to, I want to say Clubber Lang versus Rocky the first time they fought when Clubber beat him down. Like, this is where I'm at with this fight right now, where these two guys are at their stages of their career. BSD by decision. Big win, big fight, though. Looking for fireworks.
All right. Well, Jess, we found one. I'm with you on this one.
I'm with
BSD. Dude, this is a bad matchup for Poirier. This to me is just the Styles Make Fights type of matchup where Poirier has been put in fights that were basically, we want you to stand and bang. Gaethje, he's going to stand and bang. Chandler, he's going to stand and bang. Oliveira, he's going to stand and bang. McGregor is going to stand and bang. These are all stand and bang fights. This is not a stand and bang fight. Benoit St. Denis is going to grapple when Poirier wants to strike. And he's going to strike when Poirier is going to want to grapple. Yeah. He's going to fucking throw screwballs at Poirier. I wish this was a 5-round fight, man. I'm going to go decision.
A five-round fight would be phenomenal. It would be more than my heart could take at this point.
Because I think this is where we really want to see Benoit with a great veteran that has a shitload of 5-round fights under his belt.
What happened to co-main events being 5-round fights? Also, what happened to that?
I don't know. I think it got to be title fights. But can we make an exception on this one? Fucking
this
Dana?
Should have been the exception. Make
this
it a 5-round fight.
This
because
is where
Poirier can pull shit out of his hat. So you never know.
If this was the Sheik, it would be a 5-round fight. Yes, that's all I'm fucking saying, dude. I'm gonna
go and find the Sheik on your Twitter, and I'm gonna start following him.
That's a fucking animal, bro.
I'm doing it.
All right. Benoit St. Denis via decision, and it would not surprise me at all if he submits Poirier late. I'm gonna go decision, but again, I want to repeat that.
Fight of the night right here.
Would not surprise me. There's too many potential fight of the nights here for me to say with confidence that this is it. There's just too much fireworks.
I love this pick because what Jason's basically saying is that BSD is going to beat the brakes off of Poirier. So that's why I'm kind of loving this a little bit right now.
All right. So decision would not be surprised if later in the third round, Benoit catches him in a choke.
Love it.
We've got our main event. Chito Vera, just a likable dude.
God, what a fight.
Versus, this is what I'm saying, Jess, versus Sugar Sean. Dana's absolute Dalmatian, his stud, possibly Dana's favorite fighter, an absolute and a unicorn all the way down to the colored hair. This is another one, just an absolute tug of war in my brain, in between my ears. I've went both. I went, yeah, you know what? I'm going to go this way. Yeah, you know what? I'm thinking this way. But now I know which way I'm going to go. So let's start with you, Jess. Who you got?
All right. So as much as I absolutely love this fight, and I have grown very fond of Sean O'Malley. I didn't like the guy at first. I thought, man, what an attitude problem, you know?
Entitled, like, Dana baby prick.
Dana baby, you know, prick showing up with the crazy hair. But look, man, you see enough videos of this guy. He's a down-to-earth guy. He walks around, gives people fucking money and stuff. Like, guys, he's kind of cool, man. Like, I would probably, like, I'm not going to smoke a joint with him because I don't. But I would sit down and have a beer with the dude. You know what I mean? Like,
going the right way.
Share some stories and stuff or something. You know, why not? But in this fight, I think it's a bad matchup for Cheeto. Cheeto proved that, you know, he could definitely go rounds with Sean, but Sean, I think, has reached that point in his career where he's tipping the pinnacle. And that's dangerous for people. Like, we saw what happened when Chuck Liddell hit that. We saw what happened when Randy Couture hit that. We saw what happened with, you know, just a lot of guys, GSPs and the BJ Penns. And they hit that part with that pinnacle of their career. And then they're just the most dangerous animal in the room. And Sean O'Malley's right there at the tip of that, where he's going to be the most dangerous animal in the room. Sean O'Malley's long, he's tall, he's lanky, he's got kicks and strikes from all angles. He can submit you, he can knock you out, he does have some pop in those gloves. And worst of all his traits is the fact that he can get under your skin so much while in that cage. And he's going to do that to Cheeto. He's going to talk his shit, he's going to do his little things inside the cage, he's going to get under Cheeto's skin. And like we saw before in the first fight, Cheeto has a tough time dealing with that emotional stuff sometimes, and he can get out of his pocket and get in trouble that way. So the way I see it now, as much as I love Cheeto, and I don't, and if you don't love Cheeto, then fuck off, because he's a great guy. He's a great fighter. And another guy I would love to hang out with, I'm telling you, but the technicality of things is just too much. There's too much of a buildup. There's too many things that he's got to make up for that he just simply can't physically make up for. Sean O'Malley wins. I'm going to go TKO second round, late second round. My real hole in this pick would be a submission. I want to see a submission. I think it's going to be a submission. But I think more than anything, Cheeto's going to take a lot of shots and end up getting stuck on the ground, kind of ground and pound style TKO.
Yeah. You know, again, in the tug of war in my brain, When I liked Cheeto to win, or the way that I see Cheeto winning, my envisioning, if you will, he's got to make it just a dirty, gritty, nasty, mucky fight where he's just in his chest and he's not allowing Sean to be fluid. Because when you allow Sean to get his footwork rolling and get his hands moving, and it's almost like he's dancing, you're in trouble. You're in trouble because he's going to pop you on the outside. He's going to throw kicks. And when you think the kicks are coming, he's going to throw the straight right hand. He's got a really good, strong jab that he'll pepper you with. It's stiff. So I in my mind, if Cheetah's going to win this fight, he's just got to be inside of his chest, pumping him up against the cage. Just turn into a real grappling match. Just turn it into a fight, man. Just a real ugly fight, you know? You got to throw everything with nasty intent. You can't paw at him. You've got to really take it to Sean. However, with that said, I think Sean wins. I am taking Sean. I think he's going to win 3 or maybe 4 rounds here. I think when they fought nearly 4 years ago, they were in different places.
Oh, yeah.
Different mental spaces. I think even 4 years ago, it was like, oh, this is an easy Cheeto win. As opposed to now, it's just a completely different fight. And the confidence that Sean has now, as opposed to what he had 3 years ago, it's fucking night and day. And I think Sean is going to do a great job of staying on the outside, pepper him with that nasty jab that I talked about, the 1-2, the 1-2-3. He throws that teep kick. He's going to throw kicks at fucking Cheeto's knees. He's going to throw kicks at fucking Cheeto's legs. And he's just...
Look for some front kicks, too. I guarantee you he throws a couple front kicks.
Front kick, teep kick. And he's just going to make it difficult for Cheeto to get inside of that bubble, inside of that phone booth, inside of that circle that you've got to get in to make it a phone booth fight, to make it, you know, a real dog fight. I think he's going to make it very, very difficult. And I think Cheeto will break some ground. Again, I do think he'll win a round or two. I wouldn't be surprised if he bookends and he wins the first round and the fifth round. But I think we're going to get a lot of Sugar Sean, just that Sugar Sean show shit. Just that pump and the jab, the circle in, the move in, the 1-2-3 and I'm out, the 1-2 and I'm out, the kick and I'm out. You're never going to get close to me. The bull matador and Sean is the matador. I think Sean wins the decision.
Yeah. Again, no disrespect to Cheeto. It's going to be a great fight. A matter of fact, this whole card, like it,
it's insane.
We were talking about it earlier. This whole card from top to bottom is going to be pretty spectacular. I heard Ariel, speaking about Ariel earlier on his show, talk about, I don't really know what card is better, this one or 300.
This is better than 300. Don't get it. 300's deeper. It's not as sexy top heavy.
100%. That's exactly what I thought. That's exactly what I felt. That's why we do the show together, because we just feed off of each other, man. I'm telling you. Like, I looked at this card and I was like, damn, Ariel, you son of a bitch. You're right. 299 is not as deep, but for a sexy level, it is way sexier. 300 is going to be good. Don't get me wrong. It's going to be pretty amazing. But I'm sure they'll make an event out of it.
But and we'll touch on it when we get close to 300.
But 299 is a damn sexy card. And I can't wait to
see
these fights.
And the UFC dropped the fucking ball on getting that super sexy fight. And there's fun fights on there. And we all love the 205 champ stepping up. There's fun fights on there. But there's not that, oh, wow. There's just not. There's just not.
Real quick, last thought on Sean O'Malley is I haven't really seen this since Conor McGregor, to be honest. But I think if Sean wanted to, he could be a champ.
Oh, I'd have to see how he carries the weight of the net, because he would be at 145 or 155.
Yeah. 145.
He's at 135 right now.
Yeah.
Who's the 145 champ?
No, he's Sean, I believe. Oh, well, now I got to go look at that.
Bantamweight. He's bantamweight. So he's 135. So he'd be going up to 145. Who's the 145 champ right now?
He's pretty small dude. Bantamweight. I can see him moving up 10 pounds.
Who's the 145?
A little
champ?
Tiny bit of muscle. He could be a champ.
I'm dying to know now. Do you know off the top of your head who's the 145 champ?
Kapuria.
Oh.
How about that one? How horns are you over that, man?
Why would you even put that in the universe? You're going to put that. Okay, that's it. End the show. You put that in the universe.
And the show's over. Folks, that's it. We're done. I hope you enjoy the show. The pro wrestling talk, the UFC talk, the Ngannou AJ stuff, the Jake Paul stuff. We threw a little bit of everything at you today. Hope you enjoyed. Thank you for Spotify listeners. Again, we're breaking records over there. At least our records. We're breaking records constantly. I love you all. Thank you very much. Apple Podcasts. You listeners need to step up your game, man. I'm telling you. But we love you anyway. Thank you for listening. Shout out to Variety Sports. Follow them on Twitter/X, Variety_Sports_. Follow Jason at Valdez, spelled backwards, 559. Follow me at JTT_81. And then follow the show at TeamToss21. Folks, that's it for us. We love you all. Have a great week.
Peace, y'all.